The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Hey, welcome to the College Football Podcast. David Pollock and Kevin Negandhi with you. We will get you ready for the Big Ten. I can't wait. I cannot wait for this weekend. College Football Insider Adam Rittenberg, as well as ESPN.com writer Bill Connolly, will break the league down. Bill has a fantastic breakdown of each team on ESPN.com as he takes a look at the Big Ten East and the Big Ten West. And Adam with some insight on the team to watch in the Big Ten East. And it's not who you think. It is not, of course, Ohio State. Everybody's watching them. It is not Penn State. It's not Michigan. We'll get more of Adam's thoughts in a moment. Pollock will give us his picks, plus let us in on what he's been doing with his buddies when it comes to making picks. And I was a little surprised by it. To be honest with you, he's got a streak going on this year, and he's feeling really good about himself. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, review. Feedback is always welcome here on the podcast.
If you don't, kick rocks.
I think you should just respond to everybody's feedback that way. Kick rocks, right?
Kick rocks, baby. It's kind of my lifestyle. That's my life's motto. I like that.
Kick rocks?
Oh, yeah. If you don't like it, kick rocks.
Love it. We've got obviously a breakdown of our picks, and I will hear Pollock's coffee, and I will be using the motto that Pollock has introduced us to, kick rocks, Pollock. That's all I'm saying. Just kick a bunch of rocks. Let's start, though, because you've been pouring through some video, and we'll get to the game you're going to be watching, but when you pour through some of the film this week, who's your dude of the week?
I'm going to go Keir Thomas. He's number five for South Carolina. First of all, defensive tackle, anytime you wear five, I think it's awesome. I just think it's great. When you wear a single digit, just it makes you look more athletic immediately coming off the bus. But he had 10 tackles and a couple sacks versus Auburn. Played like a man. But I tell you what, man, just hunts the football, really quick first step. Comes off the ball hard. He made the sack on Bo Nix with like 30 seconds left in the ball game to kind of back them up. It was second, I think it was second and five when he made that with like 34 seconds left on the clock and kind of put them in a bad spot and kind of sealed the deal for South Carolina. J.C. Horn was really good too, by the way. He was awesome. But Keir Thomas is a guy that he's a pretty big stud, man. I like him. He's my dude of the week.
J.C. Horn, by the way, is moving up all the draft boards. Big weekend, of course, as you mentioned, against Auburn. What do you make of Auburn? Like, what's going on there? Because, you know, at one point during that game, Bo Nix just hasn't elevated himself. It doesn't feel like he's gotten better in that system. But him and Seth Williams are going back and forth in the third quarter. And young man's trying to make a play at the end of the game. With 9 seconds left on a fourth and five, and they're in the red zone there, and he runs out of bounds, or he runs around and then runs out of time, and he's tackled, and then there's no time left in the clock. What do you make of what's going on with the Tigers and the progress of Bo Nix?
Well, let me be very clear. The offensive system does not allow him to thrive because the offensive system hasn't changed in years, and it doesn't have answers to things that it should have answers to, and hot routes and matchups. And they just do things that I would do very differently, and they could take advantage of their personnel and their talent a lot better. Here's the thing. Bo Nix isn't off the hook either, Kevin. And I say that because I haven't seen a quarterback in college football evade a clean pocket more than Bo Nix. He has a bad habit. He's a really good athlete, and he can scramble around and he can make plays, but he has a really bad habit of leaving the pocket too prematurely. And so I think that he has to continue to grow in that area and has to say, listen, yeah, I got wheels, but let me do some damage with my arm first. And like the pick six was miscommunication with him and Seth Williams. It was a bad, bad play. And then there's body language on the sidelines and not talking to each other and, man, get off me. Like that's not a good precursor of what's to come for Auburn. It's already bad for Auburn. I don't know that it's going to get much better.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. And again, the progress from year one to year two, you can allow some of those mistakes and a freshman just figuring things out on the field. But, year two, a couple games under your belt, you've got to figure it out, and we're not seeing that. And then when you have a target like Seth Williams, physically, the size too, right? You've got to take advantage of that, and he'll clean up some mistakes. He'll make you look better on bad throws. And we've seen Williams bail Knicks out a couple of times this season on some bad throws and coming back for the ball and out jumping the man who's covering him. And it's just not working right now with the offense. The game you're going to be watching here, because there are a handful of games. I think,
by the way, this is the most competitive week of college football.
Yes. Yes.
This is the most, like, when you look at all the games across the board, because full disclosure, Kevin, because we're always honest with our audience, right? Like, we got to be honest with them. I don't gamble. I'm not a gambler. I don't do it. I don't do anything half, but I'm kind of all in or all out. And I tried gambling one time for like a 6-week stretch and it ended absolutely horribly. Like, it was awful.
Wait, what? How did it end bad? Like, okay. Was there a specific game that you went
on? Oh, no. It had nothing to do with the game. It had to do with me watching Tuesday night basketball. Like,
I was sweating
college
it out.
Basketball and going like, what's going on here? And then Kevin, you know me. I hate to lose more than anybody I know. I know there's people out there like, and I'm a horrible loser. I'm a miserable husband when it comes to it. I'm a miserable dad when it comes to it. I'm miserable at losing. When I lose, I got to go get it back. And so I lost, and then, I got to go get it back. And I lost, I got to get it back. It was awful. It was absolutely terrible. I turned to my wife, and I'm like, babe, I've lost a good bit of money here. I'm not allowed to do this anymore. Take this away right now. And if I ever talk about it or you see me do it, it's not okay. Make sure that you hold me accountable with this, because it's not good for my person. That's why I don't drink alcohol. That's why I don't eat fast foods and sweets and stuff. Like, I'm all in or I'm all out. And gambling, your boy's all out on, okay? So every week I give my buddy Jackson three teams and he teases them, okay? Where you, and that I've learned what a tease was through Jackson too, where you tease them and they get like points in a certain direction of whichever way you're picking a team. Mm-hmm. So Kevin, I've given him three teams. I've given him 13 parlays this year and we're 13-0. We haven't lost a single one. And every week I go through it and I start looking at the lines and two of them stick out to me right away. I'm like, okay, obvious. I went through all the good games in college football this year and nothing stood out to me. Nothing made me go, oh yeah, love that. Like last week, loved Clemson. Right off the bat, loved Clemson. You saw why, but everybody knew coming into that game why. Like I knew Clemson could put their backups in and beat the crap out of Florida State or Georgia Tech starters. So this week, anyways, long story short, sorry to go around my butt to get to my elbow, but I think there's a ton of competitive games, a ton of good games to look at that are going to be really, really fun that I don't know that we know what's going to happen, especially, you know, introducing the Big Ten.
You also loved South Carolina last week too. You were all over them.
Well, I mean, listen, a lot of that has to do with your lack of love for Auburn. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, but I do think South Carolina and Mike Bobo with that offense with Colin Hill and Harris, like they're physical, by the way. They've got several physical backs that run at you and pound you. And here's the thing. We can talk about Will Muschamp. You can talk about him all you want. And he might get fired after this year, Kevin. Those guys compete for him, man. They play hard. They scrap. When you turn on the defensive tape, those guys care. They fight hard. They play with good leverage. They play with good hands. But when you watch their offense, man, Harris is a big back. Fenwick is a big back. Both those guys, 220 coming downhill, hit you in the mouth, and they make you play four quarters. And I knew they'd make you earn it. So, you know, but I can't sit there and be like, oh, yeah, I think South Carolina's, you know, a good team. I knew Auburn had a lot of deficiencies as well.
Well, half the battle in your as you accept your shortcomings is being aware of your shortcomings, right? And you're an extremist in anything you do. You go all in. There's no halfway. There's no I'm trying to figure things out. I appreciate that you know your limitations, but you're on a roll here. Now my biggest fear is you may have just jinxed yourself. So
no, there's no such thing as that.
We'll
no
see
such thing as that.
Of course,
don't believe
no
in that
such
at all.
Thing as that. No, don't I don't believe in it either. It's just a fun thing.
You can
thing
take
to
your
play
negativity
with
somewhere elsewhere, Kevin. Okay. Take your negativity elsewhere, buddy. This is the positive bus. We ride the positive train. We don't ride the negative train. Yeah, and by the way, just to keep you in abreast of my gambling situation that people will love to hear, I'm sure, the feed has gone from me and Jackson week one to me, Jackson, and like 13 other people. The name of the feed has been changed to Cash Them Checks, and it's absolutely hilarious. It's like 13 of my buddies now. It used to just be Jackson, but it has grown incrementally throughout the season, and they've been.
You're making some dough for some friends here. Like this
cashing them checks, baby. Cash them checks.
Do you feel any pressure now that it's expanding, or do you just
bro.
Now here's another thing. Do you go with a certain superstition or anything like that? Do you change anything you do and how you think?
No, come on. You know better than that with me, bro. Here's what I do. I take the good teams in college football that I can trust and depend on. That's what I do. It's very, very simple. I don't take flyers. Like I'm not doing that, but no, I don't have any superstitions. I don't. And here's the thing. I don't have any money in this. I don't care. And I told them, do not bet more than you need to bet. But my buddy Jackson, by the way, he's got problems now. He's a degenerate. Yeah. Like, well, I love Jackson.
You're helping the cause of him going down the wrong road.
Probably. But at least I'm winning him money. He's going to bet anyways. He's just going to bet. Like this past week, he texted me. He's like, dude, I love Notre Dame. I go, I don't. He texts me during the Notre Dame game. Good call. He told me I love North Carolina or I love North Carolina over FSU. I said, I don't. And he goes, all right. He goes, and so he's literally relegated himself to he doesn't bet unless I give him the okay.
So tell me why you didn't, because you nailed it. Why didn't you like Notre Dame? Why didn't you like North Carolina?
When I look at Notre Dame is solid, not spectacular. And Ian Book, you know, has some magic and some moxie and some competitiveness. And I love him and who he is, but there's not a lot of playmakers on that offense. So I don't trust that offense to continually run away from people and to continually score points. I think so that to me, that part side of the ball, and then they're also not a defense that's going to create a ton of turnovers. And so Louisville, I think as long as they don't turn the football over, their offense can be pretty solid. So I just kind of didn't think that – I just didn't think they would run away and kill them because I don't think Notre Dame's good enough to kill them. And then North Carolina, I don't trust their defense at all. And I love the game plan of Florida State, by the way. There's two things I take away from that Florida State game. Florida State defensively, they played two high safeties the whole time. And they said, Sam Howell, check the ball down. Sam Howell, you're not creating explosive plays. Sam Howell, make reads. They didn't let Sam Howell see single or man coverage on the outside and let him bombs away. And when they did, Asante Samuel Jr. hung in there really well and handled it well. And then offensively, Florida State. By the way, Mike Norvell's team plays hard.
Yes.
And again, that's something that I respect about a coach. A coach is doing the right things and has a chance to get them to turn around when your guys buy in and play hard. There was a run in the Florida State game, literally. And listen, this is something so stupid, and people don't watch this kind of crap, and they probably shouldn't, and it doesn't really matter. But there was a run, I think, in the second quarter of the Florida State of the game last week against North Carolina, that they break it. The play starts to the right. LaDainian Webb, it was number 8, LaDainian Webb, I think. He starts to the right. He cuts back across and goes – he runs for about 50. There is two wide receivers, Kevin, that are screaming past him to go block people that are literally, like, hunting. The offensive line that we talked about so many years from Florida State, when you have a scheme, by the way, that protects your offensive line and that knows what they're doing really well, they do a good job of that, and they take care of that, and they make it better. So I love the scheme up front for Florida State. I love the fact that they understand what they're doing. They're pulling more guys, pulling multiple guys on plays. They're influencing people better. And then in the way they're competing, it's just you can see the turnaround. So I trusted Florida State to compete, especially with Jordan Travis, by the way. That dude, he's a running back playing quarterback but makes plays. That dude's a stud.
Yeah, and you can tell the way he plays, too. He plays with heart. And I know sometimes that term is overused, but
no matter what.
Well, his arm was hanging from his side at the end of the game. So that kind of showed you something.
Yeah, clearly he was hurt, and he was like, no, we're winning this game with me on the field. I'm going to make sure my decision-making is the reason why we're gonna win this game. Me sitting there watching us lose this game off the field. A ton of credit to him, because regardless of him being more of a runner than a passer, he finds a way to make plays, and that's where this offense has changed, right? The dynamic, they've been looking for a quarterback to add some stability who can make plays, and finally they've got one, and we see the effort. We saw a ton of effort against Notre Dame in that first half in South Bend, and that's when I was like, okay, things are starting to turn around here with Florida State. They don't have enough horses to play four quarters, but at least they're showing up on the road with pride. I'll tell you what, though, I feel terrible for Sam Howell and Mac at the end, because it three straight balls, three straight drops.
Oh, my gosh.
One of those catches, it's a different storyline, different conversation.
Maybe.
Potentially.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Potentially. But no. Ton of credit for Florida State and understanding a moment, right? And usually a game like that, you're up 31-7. Here comes the other team, a top five team in that environment. We've seen the last couple of years, they start to mentally break down. We didn't see that. And that's the credit with Norvell and the staff and the players in believing in themselves here. You know, I started to talk about it a little bit. The game I've got circled, we'll get to the Big Ten in a moment. The game I got circled is Iowa State, Oklahoma State. What are your thoughts about a game like that? Oklahoma State still trying to find some stability at quarterback. Obviously, Iowa State, three straight wins. I really like how Iowa State has found their identity all over. Because, again, in the opener, I think things were a little choppy, and maybe Brock Purdy was trying to figure things out and do a little too much, as we've mentioned before with Brock Purdy, that they don't have the luxury of having a variety of weapons outside of Breece Hall. It feels like they've settled down and found what is working for themselves. What do you think of this game?
Yeah, I agree. And I sense a lean for your picks a little bit later. listen, I'm president of the Breece Hall fan club. We'll continue to be. I finally get to do a tape on them on game day this week. I've been begging to do one for the past couple weeks, so I'm pretty excited about that. By the way, the best back in this game is Breece Hall. It's not Chuba Hubbard. That's not something we would have said coming into this season, by the way. But I think when you look at Iowa State, the way they've rebounded, finding more plays in the offense, it's still a very strange offense to defend, because there's so many tight ends. They play with, you know, three tight ends on a lot of snaps. And so it makes it, and then they shift and they motion, which I think is good. They don't have that guy that can take the top off the defense and be super explosive. I think they're still looking for that, but Purdy, play action, Hall running. It's an offense that's complete. And listen, we've talked about their defense for a long time. Their defense is unique. They do a three safety look almost every single snap, and you never know who's spinning down and who's blitzing, and they come from all over the place. So, and to go on the other side with Oklahoma State, you know, Illingworth has done a good job as a freshman, coming in and playing, and nobody thought that, but Spencer Sanders is now healthy. So, it's going to be interesting to watch. They're not the same guy, by the way. You know, Shane Illingworth's a mule. He's 6'5", 220. He's a statue that can sling the ball over the field. And then Spencer Sanders is obviously, you know, he's like 6'1", 6'2", you know, a lot lighter guy that is a mobile quarterback that can do a lot with his feet. Oklahoma State's defense has been really good this year, by the way. Every single game they've showed up pretty consistently. So I see why this game is going to be very, very competitive. I think both sides have played consistently throughout this season. And I think there's not a side of the football where there's a glaring weakness where you say, oh, yeah, they're going to win because of that.
You ready to go to your picks here?
Bring it, bro. Bring it.
All right. So we've changed the format here. Kevin's jumped in. And instead of saying, you know, how many wins and how many losses, we're just going to add the wins. And then if you get the upset special, you get a +2. So right now, I'll be very honest, kick rocks, David Pollock. You are at a +10 over me. I think you've got, what, 11? I've got 1. Or is that what we're doing here, Taylor?
That's correct.
You've got 11, I got 1. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, you're one game above 500 technically.
That's correct.
Yeah. Season, I think.
Okay. All right, let's just go. Let's move on. I didn't know I was working with a guy who's a savant when it comes to this betting thing all of a sudden this season. All right, let's start out the gate. We brought the team up, which will be very curious on what direction you're going to go with. Florida State and Louisville, who you got?
Man, I tell you what, I love what I saw. You know, Scott Satterfield, by the way, was what Mike Norvell was a year ago. Remember? Yes. Like we were buying into what he was selling. You know, he did a really good job of starting to build the team and starting to, you could tell, move in the right direction. And now he's 9-9, I think, as a coach, and it's kind of gone the other way. Two things, Jordan Travis, like FSU's got no shot if he's not healthy. And by the way, Kevin, not healthy. He has to be able to run the football 10 to 15 to 20 times a game to win. Like, it's not like, yeah, he can play with a dinged shoulder if he's 70%. The moment he gets hit, is he now in a bad spot? You know, that's the only reason I'm going to pick Louisville to win the game, is literally because Travis taking shots isn't a good thing. If he doesn't run the football for this team, they're not near as explosive. They're not near as dynamic. So that's why I'll take Louisville.
He's the difference, plain and simple. And with the update from Mike Norvell, is Jordan Travis right now, he says he's doing fine. And that's what he said on the Monday news conference. not a lot of confidence in that. So you're going Louisville with the unknown there. Gosh, this is going to – we start out the game with a tough one because
– you might as well go FSU because it's not working what you're thinking.
I've got to play catch-up, right?
Yeah, you've got to play catch-up.
I've got to play catch-up, right? Yeah. I'm going to go with Louisville.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got to go with Louisville because at least I know Cunningham's there. At least I know Atwell and Hawkins are there.
By the way, he was cramping up late in that game. I was watching that Notre Dame game, too, and he was either – he kept messing with his hand
Yes. The
whole time. He was messing with his hand, and I was like, what's going on with his hand? They said cramps, but I've never seen a quarterback cramp and literally continue to cramp throughout a game in his throwing. That's the first time I've ever seen that.
Very weird. Let's go Iowa State, Oklahoma State, the game that we just briefly talked about.
You go first.
You make a great point at the quarterback position. I feel really good about Iowa State, but Oklahoma State's defense is playing really well. I'm going to go with Iowa State.
Okay. I'm going Iowa State, too. I think I've seen it there, too. Well, yeah, but I trust what I've seen from them throughout the season. They've been challenged, and I love the way they've responded to challenges and making plays, and I trust Purdy and those guys. So I'm with you on Iowa State. So we're two for two together.
You just sit there and wonder, because Oklahoma State, if they get through this game, they've got Texas the following week, then Kansas State, then OU. So the next 4 weeks, or at least the next four games for Oklahoma State, we'll learn a lot about the Cowboys going
forward. Figure out who they are.
All right, the Big Ten on ABC. And you guys are going to be in Minnesota, snowing yesterday. A fantastic setting. Michigan, Minnesota. Michigan, a 3.5-point favorite. Who you got?
You know, I don't know at all anything about these teams. And they're playing each other week one. So you don't get those. You know, usually we have those cupcake games to watch tape and kind of figure out who they are. But I'll tell you this. It's very hard for me to pick a team when I don't know how good the quarterback is. And Tanner Morgan's good. I mean, Tanner Morgan is a stud. I love Tanner Morgan. I think Michigan, I'll take Michigan because Michigan has a lot more talent across the board. You know, I think the quarterback spot with Joe this year will be interesting to watch, and I don't know what he's going to bring, but I do know that the weapons around him with Ronnie Bell and company are really good too, and I think they'll be able to run the football. So I'm going to go Michigan, but I don't feel extremely confident about it.
Yeah, the golden rule right here in college football and where we live and what we're doing is trust the quarterback, and that is Tanner Morgan, and trusting the quarterback, and trusting it's not going to be a crazy Minnesota environment like we've seen in the past, of course, because of the pandemic. So I think that also plays a role. How will Milton handle the big lights? Because there's a lot of pressure from the start. I say all of that, and I am with you. I'm going Michigan as well. I trust Michigan, and I know Row the Boat and all the people that are Gopher fans are probably going to blast us for this, but and if they lose, have a laugh. Come back at us. We appreciate that. All right. I'm really curious about your pick here with Cincinnati SMU, because Cincinnati's now a top 10 team in the rankings. And I know you've come in with some dripping sarcasm on what's going on here and trusting Cincinnati. Taking on an SMU team that can light it up, and Shane Buechele, the Texas transfer, he's been outstanding. Where are you going here? SMU undefeated, Cincinnati undefeated, the final two in the American.
It's your job to go first this time.
Is it my time? I'm going to go with SMU.
You're going smooth?
Yeah, they're favored by 2.5 points, so no upset. I'm going with SMU.
I didn't even debate this. This is Cincinnati for me. There was no debate in my head at all. I like Cincinnati's defense in this game. I don't like SMU's defense. And here's the thing, too. No Roberson for SMU. That offense, while it's still good, it's significantly worse. It losing a guy like that in a vertical passing game, when you're a vertical passing team, I think it dents the offense. I think you're going to see Smooth's offense really struggle this week. And you're going to be like, why? Why did they struggle? And you're going to look back and you're going to go, oh, yeah, I forgot. Pollock told me number 8's out. Robertson's out. No, okay.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player. He's got the speed, and he's the game breaker in this offense.
Not anymore, because he's gone. So I'm
trusting Shane Buechele. I'm going back to one thing.
This is why your picks are struggling right now. You're trusting the wrong people.
The arrogance and cockiness. Slipping through. All right. We talked about this briefly. It's going to be a huge storyline. The matchups, there are no cupcakes. You just figure out a team early on. How about Iowa Purdue in this matchup in West Lafayette?
Here's the thing. Here's what I know, and you know, from watching college football for all these years. We know – do you know what Iowa football team is going to show up? I do. Mm-hmm. It's going to be – Iowa is literally going to be a football team that's going to be 1,000% physical. They're going to run the football. They're going to be tough. I know what I'm going to get. I don't know what I'm going to get from their quarterback. You know, I think it's Spencer Petras who's going to be starting. But I know that they're not going to ask him to go win the football game. When you look at Brahm on the other side, by the way, he's out. Jeff Brahm's out. He's not coaching the game with Corona. Rondell Moore, one of the best playmakers. I know what I'll get from Iowa. I'm taking Iowa.
Yeah, we don't know. We have no idea from Spencer Petras. He has an arm, but we just don't know. We don't know how he's going to deal with in that environment, right? Yeah, he's got two. I appreciate that. Thanks. you crack yourself up. I'm with you. I'm going with Iowa as well. I trust Iowa because we know the Iowa identity. Run the football, play physical with our 2-3-star guys, and we'll just beat you up. All right, this game's really weird because, you know, West Virginia's turned into – every time I go with West Virginia, they let me down. Every time I go the other side, they win. West Virginia, Texas Tech.
So who are you going with then?
Texas Tech is the dog. It is homecoming. I am going to go with West Virginia.
Okay. I'm going West Virginia, too. West Virginia, statistically, by the way, number one defense in the country, which is kind of amazing, I think, to think about that and say that out loud.
Props to the Big 12 for saying that, right?
Yeah, not sure. I think I trust their defense. I trust Brown to run the football. I don't trust Texas Tech in any way, shape, or form. They're going with Colombo at quarterback, which I don't think is the end of the world, but I just think WV is going to be a little bit sounder defensively. I like their run game. I'll stick with WVU.
All right. Do we got an upset special from you?
I'm very confident in my Cincinnati pick over Smooth. So I'm taking Cincinnati to get my extra point for my upset special.
Okay. I'm confident in Iowa State and getting 3.5 points.
So I wrote that down too, by the way. I like that one too.
I will go with Iowa State with the +2 as well. So we'll double down on those games that we're picking. And, brother, have fun in Minnesota. I know you guys are going to have a blast, and it's great to see Maria back with the team here after the NBA. You guys will have fun. She'll bail you out with the "you had one job."
Dang Skippy, bro. Don't let me talk too much.
Take care. Hey, listen, let's see if you're going to wear – are you going to wear a jacket? I want to see if you're going to wear a jacket. Are you planning on is the wife planning on to pack a jacket for you or no?
I actually got a text from Reese, because Reese is kind of like my he says big brother. I go more like dad. But he said, pack gloves, pack an overcoat, packed long johns. He was like, it's going to be super cold because I'm the idiot who shows up like without gloves, without an undershirt, without anything on. So yeah, I'll be ready. I'll be ready for bear. I'll have all of it ready there. Hey, here's the cool thing now. Now that I'm on set the whole time, Kev, now I can actually take advantage of the heaters.
I was going to say, you got the heater there underneath.
Dude, right? There's, first of all, please don't credit us for being tough. There's heaters over our head. There's heaters under our feet. Like, now, listen, Kirk's got the AC on all the time. He's just a freak. I don't know what's wrong with that cat. But I always had to get up, stand off to the side, and freeze my tail off. Now I'm going to be, you know, on the set the whole time. So it definitely makes a difference from that standpoint. That'll be a little bit more enjoyable than normal.
Hey, listen, if you're outside, if your feet are warm, that is the biggest difference on making sure your body's warm. Trust me.
100% agree with you. That's the smartest thing you've said the whole podcast.
Yeah. Well, every now and then I'm good for one thing, right? Brother, be safe. Have fun. Talk to you. And it's great to bring in Bill Connolly from ESPN.com as we take a closer look at the Big Ten. Bill, you've had a couple of write-ups about breaking down the divisions in this conference as we get ready for football on Friday, as well as a great slate on Saturday. What I love and what we've seen in the first month and a half of college football this season is no cupcakes. Let's just get right into it. And let's just figure things out. And that has triggered some chaos in some of the scores and some of these games up and down. The stress level, all-time high. And then, you know, you get a couple games in, and then next week, Halloween, we've already got Ohio State, Penn State. So we're not messing around with the schedule in this conference. Let's start, of course, with the Buckeyes, because I think everybody coming into this season viewed Clemson and Ohio State. Now Alabama's in that conversation, what we've seen in the last couple weeks, especially coming off that win against Georgia. But when it comes to elite, not programs, elite teams this year, it's Clemson and Alabama. Where does Ohio State fit in that mix right now in your mind?
I mean, obviously everything's a little weird since we've already seen half of a season and now the season's starting for a lot of these teams. But I mean, on paper, Ohio State is right there with Clemson and Alabama or ahead of them. I mean, you look up and down their roster, maybe you can start to come up with some questions about their defensive line or something if you try pretty hard, but it's really hard to get too worried about the Ohio State defensive line with the talent they've produced and the number of star recruits they have. But otherwise, I mean, they've got All-American candidates at quarterback, running back, wide receiver, offensive line, linebacker, cornerback, safety. I mean, Drew Chrisman's somehow still there at punter too. Like they've got an absolutely loaded roster. It looked like it kind of was coming apart there for a second, and then it came back together for the season. So, I mean, on paper, they're as untouchable as any team in college football. We just have to see if, you know, all the oddity of the last few months and you know, starting late and all that, maybe it has some ill effects. Maybe they start slowly or something. I don't know. But on paper, they're phenomenal.
Bill, you bring up a great point, too, about the uncertainty and then, you know, stars deciding I'm opting in. I want to play. And there is a certain motivation because I got to tell you, last year in the semifinal, that game against Clemson, that could have gone either way. I mean, if that completion in the end zone, it's a different storyline, right? And the physicality that you saw from Ohio State and Clemson and how they kept on hitting Trevor Lawrence, I was really impressed by how this team, and I felt like this team could have won the national championship a year ago. Is there any concerns that you would have with Ohio State with the way their schedule lays out, or you know, is there a weakness aside from that line or any concern at wide receiver with the depth and the experience?
Starting with Penn State, having your biggest game in week two is at least a little weird. I mean, theoretically, they should handle Nebraska pretty fine and they'll work out a lot of kinks. You're talking about how great it is to watch all these teams having to dive right into the deep end. I'm not sure they feel that way. And, you know, both in Penn State, especially not only having Ohio State in week two, but having Indiana in week one, like just straight competence across the board. And if Penn State has any weaknesses, it will be punished pretty severely, I think, by Indiana, even before they get to Ohio State. But as far as Ohio State goes, I mean, again, they should handle Nebraska. They get Rutgers the week after Penn State. I think the schedule takes shape pretty nicely for them. They avoid Wisconsin and Minnesota somehow. So really, I don't want to say it's a one-game schedule because Michigan could obviously be pretty good. And Indiana, I just said, was pretty good. But if they survive Penn State, they're I think with my SP Plus rankings, they're something like a 17 or 18-point favorite in every other game. So I really can't even pretend to be all that concerned about them if they survive Happy Valley next week. The defensive, I mean, other than the defensive line, I think that is at least full of unknowns. Like, we assume they're going to come up with a brand new set of stars, but they haven't yet. And if that's a problem, if the second cornerback position maybe turns out to be a little of an issue, that might be something Penn State can exploit, but I don't know who else can.
Well, when you look at Penn State, there's a huge hole in the middle with Micah Parsons. We're talking about a top 10 pick, even top five, debating on who's picking when and what are the needs of an NFL team. And losing Journey Brown potentially, I said yesterday on SportsCenter, the one thing that this team does have is depth at the running back position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Kane and Jordan and, you know, one of the young recruits that just came in. That it's a loss, but not as big of a loss as Micah Parsons on the other side. How do you view Penn State here as a top 10 team?
Yeah, I mean, I really like Noah Kane. Journey Brown was easily the most explosive roster or running back on the roster, but Noah Kane is extremely efficient. He can do, you know, all the things that Kirk Soraka was able to do at Minnesota last year. That they didn't produce many big plays in the run game, but they were just so steady with it that, the linebackers, the safeties had to be preoccupied. And as soon as they were wrong-footed, Minnesota would RPO them to death. They'd hit them with slants, they'd hit them with go routes, and they'd create their big plays that way. So Noah Kane could be that back. I can't be all that worried about that. Although obviously we need to figure out what they have at receiver. Micah Parsons was, I had a piece we had at Knicks obviously about what was basically, he was the best Swiss Army knife in college football. He was kind of their best pass rusher, run defender, and really kind of nickel safety as well. Like he could cover, even though that probably wasn't the best use of his time really. So they still have potentially awesome defensive ends to cover the pass rushing part of that. Shaka Tony, Jason Owe. They still have very good linebackers. Brandon Smith now plays probably a bigger role. And he was almost every bit as much of a star recruit as Parsons was. And of course they've got plenty of guys to cover out of the nickel as well, but he was all in one. And so now all these other guys have to raise their game at least a little bit. And you know, they've had good defenses before Parsons. They'll have a good defense again, but it was potentially a next level defense. And that's going to be hard to match without Parsons.
Let's stay in the East here. And the great unknown here is Michigan, right? And right out the gate, hey, you're going to be on the road prime time against Minnesota. And you're going to go with Joe Milton. When you see the size of Milton at quarterback, 6'5", 240, they've got a ton of talent, but it's the lack of experience that stands out. And the elephant in the room, when you talk about Power 5 FBS coaches who have less than 2 years left on their contract, there's only one. It's Jim Harbaugh. Go figure. How do you view Michigan coming into Saturday night's game as well as overall in the season?
I'm really excited about Michigan, but I don't necessarily mean that in a straight good way. I'm just excited to see what they're capable of because they have one of the more high potential sophomore classes in the country right now. Joe Milton has a huge arm. He hasn't, in the times he's gotten to see the field so far, that hasn't always been a good thing. I mean, he's had kind of explosions in both directions, but he's got massive potential. Charbonnet and Haskins have massive potential. The receiving core has been thinned out dramatically, but they have three sophomore receivers in was Sandra Still, Jackson, and Cornelius Johnson, who are all blue chippers, who are all have massive potential. And then you just go down the line. They have high-level sophomores on both lines. They've got McGrone at linebacker. They've got sophomores in the secondary who look good. That's all great, but relying on sophomores tends to be kind of a volatile recipe. And so how much of that upside comes through, how much of that downside comes through, we don't really know in advance. And this first game is pure high ceiling versus high floor with Michigan versus Minnesota. Minnesota, I think we know what to expect from them to a large degree, but Michigan's a total wild card.
Yeah, and when you have the consistency with Tanner Morgan on the one side, that's the sure thing coming into a game like this. That could be the difference, especially late. Let's stay in the Big Ten West here as we transition and bring up Minnesota. You've got Wisconsin, top 15 team. You got Nebraska and the unknown there and Scott Frost. Illinois surprised many people last year. How do you view this entire division? Is there a team that stands out? And we'll start with Wisconsin, and then who else do you think can give Wisconsin a run?
Yeah, it's kind of – I always view the West the same way, it seems like. It's basically Wisconsin gets the first crack at the title. If they are rolling with their run game, if they've got the disruptive defense that they usually have, then they're the most likely champion, and I'll stick with that this year. Obviously, you know, losing Jack Cohn, having Graham Mertz start out the year at quarterback, having maybe a by-committee approach for once at running back, that's a little bit new, but their line is still extremely experienced. Their defense has they need a couple new disruptive linebackers, but they've got a whole lot of guys who looked good in small samples. Secondary super experience. I start with Wisconsin, but beyond that, I do think Minnesota. We do need to see their new safeties in action. We do need to see all these potential number two receivers they've got. You know, somebody needs to, if Bateman's replacing Tyler Johnson, then somebody has to replace Bateman, because it was kind of, it was both of them that caused so much problems, especially with the RPOs. So somebody needs to step up there. I got a few more questions about them, but those are the two most proven commodities. Iowa looks like Iowa in a lot of ways, but they have a new quarterback. You know, there's been turnover on the line, turnover throughout the defense, really. And so I don't quite trust them as much yet. And then, of course, Nebraska is a complete wild card, too. I think on paper they look closer to what they were supposed to be last year than they did last year. I think they absolutely have top 30 potential if the defense comes along, and if Adrian Martinez has a couple receivers, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I still trust Wisconsin the most and Minnesota the second most.
Yeah, Martinez, he's the wild card, right? If he stays healthy and cuts down on his turnovers, then Nebraska will be in every single game, because he is a playmaker. It's just he's got to stay consistent, and they continue to add more and more weapons. Your article is on ESPN.com. I love the breakdown that you just don't do an overall thing, right? You just break down the divisions in the East and the West. Very in-depth stuff on ESPN.com. Bill, appreciate it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Always great to have College Football Insider Adam Rittenberg joining us here on the College Football Podcast. And normally, it's the way we've had the college football season set up. Usually, when Adam's on, we are talking about COVID and how teams are responding, how conferences are responding. It's actually great to have Adam on here to talk a little bit about football with the Big Ten, and with the Big Ten opening up their season in a couple of days. Adam, when I mentioned the Big Ten, let's do a little wordplay. And what's the first thing that comes to mind when I mention Ohio State?
Well, I just think dominance, and, you know, this isn't one word, but, you know, they wanted this. They wanted this probably more than anybody else because of what's at stake for, you know, everybody in that program. You know, they realize how good they can be this season. They realize they can get back to the college football playoff. I don't know if Justin Fields can win the Heisman, you know, playing only 8 or 9 games, but there's just there's obvious goals out there, you know, beyond just winning the Big Ten. And so, you know, now they've got that opportunity, and I'm really interested to see, you know, how they perform, because this is something that, as soon as the Big Ten postponed the season back in August, you could sense the disappointment out of Columbus, and now it's just a few days away. And so I think it's going to be an incredibly focused team with some obviously high level players on both sides of the ball.
What kind of pressure when you see Ohio State succeed? And on Monday, I thought Herb Street brought up a great comparison. He compared Jim Harbaugh to John Cooper. And when I bring up John Cooper at Ohio State, from people on the outside, they're like, well, he was a successful coach. To many Buckeyes, it's like, oh, all the losses to Michigan. And now it's the same deal here with Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. Successful coach, but all the losses to Ohio State. What kind of pressure is Harbaugh dealing with if Ohio State's a top two team, and we feel like they are in that conversation with Alabama and Clemson, potentially top three, but it will be sorted out. and Michigan continues to kind of sputter and not get that relevance in the top 25, what kind of pressure is he facing this season?
Yeah, I mean, tremendous pressure. I mean, one thing to note is that, you know, Cooper had three top six teams in 4 years between 95 and 98. So, you know, the Michigan is losing to Ohio State, but also not in that range either. So that's the other problem, is that they're not beating Ohio State, and they're also not finishing in the top six very often. And at this point in Harbaugh's tenure, I think that there was certainly hope they would be, a regular national contender. And they haven't really been a regular Big Ten contender on a frequent enough basis, primarily because of their struggles against Ohio State. And so, you know, it's a different feeling, Kevin. I mean, remember when Jim Harbaugh was starting out, you know, everything he was doing was getting massive attention, and the tweets and this and that. You know, everything has become much quieter around that program. The attention is elsewhere, and it deserves to be elsewhere. It deserves to be on Columbus and State College and some of these other places, because Michigan hasn't measured up. Now, they have an opportunity, as they do every season, but to me, it comes down to this. If they are not much, much better at quarterback, they will never beat Ohio State. If you look at the two programs' histories long-term, I'm actually doing a piece about this for Ohio State in a couple of weeks. Michigan has the much better quarterback tradition. What's changed under Ryan Day is that he's made that an elite position in Columbus, and they tend to have more talent than everybody else in the conference anyway on a yearly basis. So if you're Michigan, you have some really good players, no doubt. I mean, Quiddy Pay and Aiden Hutchinson are excellent linemen. I think their offensive line is good at tight end, good at receiver, good at running back. But if Joe Milton is not able to compete with a guy like Justin Fields, then I don't even think this is a conversation with Michigan being able to challenge for the East Division. And that's a lot of pressure on a first-year starter, but that's just the facts. If Joe Milton is not closer to an elite-level quarterback than the guys that we've seen under Jim Harbaugh so far, then I just don't see how Michigan can compete with an Ohio State team that they haven't been able to stop offensively in quite some time.
And what is baffling is you look at Harbaugh's track record before coming to Michigan and who he's worked with and the magic, with Andrew Luck and what he did with Colin Kaepernick with the 49ers and making that decision with Alex Smith and going with Kaepernick and changing kind of how the offense was set up in San Francisco. You would anticipate by now Michigan would have a line of quarterbacks, right? Of development and then stars, development and stars. And he just keeps on missing, and transfers have come in, and young stars have high school stars have been hyped to come in, and it has not translated to any type of success. And it's not fair to put this on Milton, but those are the expectations coming into a game on Saturday night out on the road at Minnesota, where he has to perform, because there is talent, like you mentioned, everywhere else. And Bill Connolly mentioned that they've got a lot of sophomore talent. So the recruiting is working. It's just the development at the quarterback position. You bring up Penn State. How close is Penn State to Ohio State? You know, and the rankings can be so misleading because we just have yet to see teams play. But Penn State's a top 10 team, number 8 in the rankings. How close are they really to Ohio State right now?
Well, they're the closest team in the Big Ten from a talent standpoint. You know, in talking to coaches and others who observe the league, you know, they're the team that can step on the field with Ohio State and relatively go toe-to-toe. You look at the last four meetings, Penn State won the game in 2016 in State College. Then two 1-point wins for Ohio State. And then last year, when Ohio State was so dominant, you know, Penn State was the only team that kept that game relatively close. They did lose by 11 in the end, but they're a team that at most positions, they resemble Ohio State. But like Michigan, I mean, they're going to need to get better at quarterback. Sean Clifford, a really good season last year, but he's going to have to be great beginning week two when the Buckeyes come into State College. You know, Kirk Ciarrocca is the new play caller for Penn State coming over from Minnesota. Coaches love him in the Big Ten. They just love what he does. Simplified system, RPO heavy, but he's a guy that maybe can get this Penn State offense, you know, playing at a pretty high level. Unfortunately for them, they don't have their best defensive player. I think the best defensive player in the Big Ten, with Micah Parsons, choosing to opt out. So it's going to be tough on their defense, just like every defense that faces Ohio State. But in terms of talent, it's Penn State. and then there's a drop off. Then it's the Michigans, the Wisconsins, the Iowas, the Minnesotas. I'm interested to see what Minnesota has after that breakthrough season. They have their quarterback returning, their receiver in Rashad Bateman, the Big Ten's receiver of the year. But they did lose quite a lot, Kevin, on the defensive side, 4 draft picks, including Antoine Winfield, who's obviously playing very well already as a rookie in the NFL. So, it's Penn State, and then we'll see, because nobody really has consistently challenged Ohio State other than the Nittany Lions in recent years.
Yeah, well, the Nittany Lions out the gate will be tested. They got Ohio State on Halloween, but they start off against Indiana. How good is Indiana?
Yeah, Indiana is really interesting to me. I mean, both Indiana and Minnesota in a way, because other than the 3 newcomers to the league, Kevin, in Nebraska, Maryland, and Rutgers, these two teams have the longest drought without a Big Ten championship. They haven't won one since 1967, but they're getting a lot closer. And Indiana, they're on the tougher side with Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Michigan State, but they have recruited and developed at a really good rate. And there's real confidence within that program about Michael Penix, who returns at quarterback. He was really good for the first half of the season last year. Then he was injured and he was out. He's surrounded by a lot of talent at running back, receiver, one of the better tight ends in the conference. And then Tom Allen, I think his biggest accomplishment has been building up the talent on the defensive side. That defense for decades was a bottom of the Big Ten unit, a group that was just holding Indiana back from even making bowl games. And last year they went 8. I think they have a chance to make some noise and just be a difficult team, a team that affects the Big Ten race. I don't think they're going to win the West Division. But if you look at who they have on their schedule this year, beginning with Penn State in the opener, and they obviously have Ohio State and Michigan later on in the season, but they also have Wisconsin in a crossover game late in the year that could impact the West Division race. So they're a team that I think is talented enough to help shape how this Big Ten season plays out.
Cannot overlook the Hoosiers. Who are we overlooking in the West when you see that broken down? Of course, Wisconsin headlines, and we touched a little bit on Minnesota, but what's the storyline you're watching in the West of the Big Ten?
Yeah, I know you had Bill on, and it's kind of funny reading his great preview yesterday on ESPN.com. All the teams seem to be projected in 4-4, 3-5, 5-3. So, I think Wisconsin, you have to start with them because they've won that division consistently, but there's a belief among coaches in the league that they may take a step back. So I think Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota are probably where you start in the West, but I could really make a case for the other teams to all make a jump as well. I mean, you look at Nebraska. Is this finally the year that they really take a step forward under Scott Frost? You have a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. Purdue gets Rondale Moore to opt back in. He was an All-American in 2018, was injured for most of last year. A lot of coaches believe that Moore and David Bell is the best wide receiver tandem in the conference. Purdue also recruiting at a higher level. Northwestern, they get a quarterback in Peyton Ramsey, who transferred from Indiana, who started more than 20 games in the Big Ten, and they get a new play caller, long overdue change at offensive coordinator. This is a team that consistently won 8 or 9 games until last year. And then Illinois, they have their quarterback back. They made a bowl game last year. So I really think you could see the West beat up on each other, and a lot of teams have the capability to pull off upsets. But I would certainly look mostly at the Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota at the top of that division.
Are you going anywhere this weekend? Is there a travel game for you?
No, in this new environment, as Kevin, it's mm-hmm. there's not a whole lot of value to being there. As much as I'd love to be there, even in an empty stadium, I'll certainly just be monitoring for the time being. But hopefully at some point I'll get out there again.
Hopefully, yes. No doubt about it. Adam, fantastic stuff. Thanks for joining us here. And we could actually talk football.
Yes,
a preview to a season. I appreciate it. And, of course, we'll have you back here on the podcast as we continue the season with the Big Ten and more questions, of course, when the Pac-12 rolls around, too.
Anytime, my friend. Appreciate it.
And big thanks to Adam Rittenberg, Bill Connolly for their thoughts on the Big Ten as we get ready for the league opening up their schedule on Friday night and then full slate on Saturday, as well as David Pollack, as he will be on the road in Minnesota, and we'll be watching. We'll be watching if he's got the gloves on, the jacket on. I'm glad that Reese is dressing him up and getting ready to go trip by trip. Taylor Schwenk always doing a fantastic job on the other side, our producer here of the College Football Podcast. I can't wait to break it down next Monday with Herbie and Pollock and what we saw and the reaction from the Big Ten, because each and every game, get ready, buckle up, because the next month and a half, 2 months are going to be insane. And that's a good thing here in the college football space, because each and every week, I think we will see an upset. And we all like that. We like the drama. It's great for the sport. It's great for all of us as viewers. One more football. We just ask you to stay safe, social distance, wear a mask, and be good. Till then, we'll talk to you on Monday.